In a home where time is not taken to stop and think, material and moral disorder very often insidiously introduces itself and becomes a habit. Routine begins to dominate family prayer, meals, and all the common activities. Discipline is reduced to the more or less nervous reflexes of the parents, and the bond begins to crack. These deficiencies and many others may be observed not only in homes without formation, ignorant of the problems of discipline and marital spirituality, but also in those which might be considered graduates in family science. Through failing to practice the necessary recollection, the couple no longer sees what is apparent to an outsider, negligences which friends mention to each other, but not to those involved for fear of being misunderstood. Some families, and family movements, have seen this problem and made certain attempts at a solution. One couple told me recently from their own experience how helpful it is for husbands and wives to leave their children once a year and vacation together or take a trip for a week. But perhaps you are thinking that not everyone has the domestic help, the friends, or parents who are willing to take care of the children. There are other solutions. Three families I know banded together for their vacations, went to the same place, and each couple was able to get away for a week by themselves, leaving to the other two the care of their children. There is still another way to escape the routine of the home. Take your calendar, and just as you note a concert or a movie, or a visit with friends, make a note for a date with yourselves, and let it be understood that these 2 or 3 hours are sacred. No less a reason than it would take to cancel a dinner invitation with friends should be sufficient to cancel the engagement with yourselves. How to use these hours? First of all, decide that you are not in a hurry. Be different this time. Launch out into the deep, change your point of view, forget your preoccupations. Read together perhaps a well-chosen chapter of a book reserved for these privileged occasions. Then, if you haven't already, pray for a long moment. Having thus entered into the peace of the Lord, speak to one another of those thoughts, feelings, secrets, which it is not easy and often not desirable to speak during the active and noisy days, and which nevertheless it is dangerous to seal up in your heart, for as you know, silence is the enemy of love. Make a pilgrimage to the roots of your love. Think again of the ideal which you had in the beginning when you walked together with a light step. Renew your fervor. Make an examination of your marital conscience. Bring to this examination sincerity and clarity, and get down to the real causes of any troubles you observe. Why not devote some time to meditating on each of your children, asking the Lord to put His eye in your heart, according to His promise, in order to see and love them as He does, in order to guide them according to His plans. Finally and especially, ask yourselves if God really comes first among you. If you have time left, do whatever you like, but don't go back to ordinary tasks, or to TV. Have you nothing more to say? Then be quiet together, for you may find this not the least profitable moment. Recall the phrase of Maeterlinck. Not knowing each other yet, we did not dare to be silent together. What I have just described is only one means of keeping your love and your home young and vital. Certainly there are many other ways. But this one, adopted by many couples I know, has already proved itself worthwhile. The concern of love. In the course of my visits to homes, I sometimes ask, "Do you care about the sanctification of your children?" I always get a very quick and confident yes. Then I ask, "Are you concerned about your own sanctification?" Again I get a yes. But when I ask, "Are you ever concerned about the spiritual progress of your partner?" I often get a hesitation. Frequently the answers are negative. "My husband is no longer a child. He can take care of himself. I don't doubt that, but it's not a question of directing him. Why leave him to struggle alone at this most important and difficult task? I respect his private life too much to interfere with it." Preaching to him is certainly a lack of respect, but an overcautiousness is a failure in love. He is more perfect than I am. Is that a real reason for not helping him? When I am in the confessional, and I have the feeling that my penitent is holier than I don't abandon him for that reason, I don't ask him to take my place, and I kneel in his, I know that I have the grace for my state. All this shows, once again, that the duties and obligations to the partner in marriage are not very well appreciated. At the time they are united in the sacrament of marriage, how few are the couples who understand the wonderful confidence which Christ places in them. This person in whom my grace has worked for many years, I now confide to you. I need you to finish what has been started. I depend on you. Never forget that you more than anyone else are responsible for his sanctification, that no one else can bring him more abundantly the graces which he needs. The only language which love knows desires the fullest perfection of the beloved. His human development and happiness surely, but first and above all his spiritual fulfillment, without which his life cannot be a success, but rather a failure, eternally. True love is ambitious for the best, true love demands the highest. This ambition is not to be confused with the tyranny of those self-centered individuals, who, when they find annoying faults in their partner, become impatient and complain of them. This is the reaction of self-love. To be lovingly concerned is not so much to concentrate on the defects of another, as every teacher knows, but rather to nurture in a soul, in the same way one protects a candle flame, the growth of generosity towards God and neighbor. If I am not mistaken, Saint Francis de Sales said to Philotheus, "Do you want to get rid of faults? Set fire to the four comers of the forest, and the beasts will flee from it." Perhaps you are asking, what can one do in a practical way to help in the sanctification of his partner? Sanctification is such a high-sounding work, I don't even know where to start. In my case it seems an impossible task. What must be done first is in the interior order, and for some, whose partners refuse all spiritual effort, this is all that can be done. But it is already a great deal to have and to maintain deep in your soul that desire for the sanctification of him whom God has confided to you. Take responsibility for the task, join yourself to it, promise yourself to spare nothing to help him realize his vocation. And let that desire be translated into prayer, never forgetting that your prayer as a spouse draws an exceptional force and efficaciousness from the sacrament of marriage. Join penance to prayer. You have not done everything for him so long as you have not done penance. Then take a clear look at your partner. Know his gifts, apparent or hidden, like good seed in his soul, and help him bring them to fruition. Don't ignore his faults, but don't pit yourself against them. That would be a grave defect of which many married persons are guilty. There are those who only know how to see what is bad. This clarity of self-love is very different from the lucidity of love which I am urging upon you. Something I remember will clarify perhaps what I mean. Invited to dine with some friends, I was subjected to a test by their 7-year-old son. "What is this?" he asked me. "A bottle," I said. "You must be more exact." "A green bottle." "What else?" he said. "A bottle half full." The boy clapped his hands, and went and got his score sheet. In one column, he listed the pessimists, those who answered, "a bottle half empty," on the other, the optimists, those who answered, "a bottle half full." I was not a little proud to be with the latter. Do you always have this optimistic view of your partner? Do not be satisfied to know his virtues and vices. Help him to know them. I know this is difficult to do, I know it is often preferable to be silent. But sometimes at least the silence is only weakness, human respect, timidity. Believe me, there is something singularly refreshing in a home where the husband and wife can speak frankly and fully to each other, and hear the other with an open heart. Let your help be humble, the aid of a sinner who aids a sinner and hopes to be aided by him. To humility join discretion, which forbids all pressure, all sentimental intimidation, which respects the ways of God in that person, ways which may not correspond to our desires. After all, it is God's plans we must will, and not our own. Finally, let your love be patient, that simple patience which confidently expects the seasons to come. Then your loving concern will yield its fruits. A note to newlyweds. To give you a full view of what Jesus Christ has done to save love and to make it grow, recall that it is you who conferred the sacrament upon yourselves. You assumed in some manner a sacerdotal power. This was Christ's way of making marriage magnificent. Listen to him as he speaks to each of you. I know you wish to give everything to the one you love. You bring him the wealth of your heart, but I know that you would like to have still more to give. Therefore, I have confided in you the graces of marriage. I have charged my priest to transmit them to you. But I wish that your partner receive them through you, I wish you to receive them through him. I want you to have the joy of giving him more than a human love. I want him to recognize you with warmth and gratitude, as the giver of a magnificent, divine gift. Isn't this a marvelous revelation of the love of Christ? Be faithful to the Catholic conception of marriage and love. As opposed to it, what can secular attitudes offer or philosophies invent? Jesus Christ, having given you so much, what does he expect from you? He asks your collaboration. He needs you. If it is true that you could not be creatures without him, it is no less true that he cannot be creator without you. Promise today to welcome this God who knocks at your door beseeching you, give me children. Don't refuse me the joy of being father, the joy of giving life, the joy of communicating my grace and my happiness. Don't be miserly. Others, friends and visitors will come knocking at your door. May they find love, gentleness, and devotion to Jesus Christ in this home where he is master. How many will be revived by the flame of your hearth who would have died of cold outside? Don't forget that it is in the family and by the family that Christian couples are the witnesses of Christ. Thus you will aid priests whose achievements often could not endure without your collaboration. How many times they worry that the new convert or the solitary Christian will not be taken in by this church in miniature, the Christian family. Christ not only asks your collaboration but he invites himself into your family as he did at Cana and Bethany. Do not treat him as a simple visitor welcomed with politeness, or like the doctor called in case of an accident, not even as a friend whose visit brings joy, but rather as the true head of the family. Under the Christian roof he is at home, the members of the family know him. Everything about the house, the way of life, the rapport of husband and wife, the affection between parents and children affirm that he is the head of the family. Nothing is done, nothing is said or thought except under his paternal regard. Children and friends can easily see that he presides over meal times, bedtime, work and play, at all hours, both difficult and joyous. In this life in common with Christ, keep close to your heart the desire to enter always further into his knowledge by the study of his teachings and meditations on his thought, by reading about his deeds throughout the centuries. How radiant these families are, where minds are always young and ready to be awed, never ceasing to explore the mysteries of their faith. And how easy it is for them to pass from study to prayer in common. May this be an honored evening habit among you when you and the children are gathered together in the intimacy of the family. In this period of prayer you assume the cares and concerns of God. Isn't it natural that the family share the preoccupations of Christ since Christ shares theirs? Day by day parents and children avidly follow together the great epic of the apostles who plant the cross in the four corners of the world. And in your home let the big news be what concerns the sufferings and progress of the church. Sovereignty of God. The subject of this essay came to me this morning during Mass, the Mass of the Holy Family. It is no gospel of sweetness, tenderness, happy familial intimacy which was chosen for this Mass, but the disconcerting page of Saint Luke. On the return journey, Mary and Joseph are astonished to discover that Jesus is not there.